Welcome to Money Sense. I'm Julie Ellenbecker, president of Ellenbecker Investment Group. EIG believes in the importance of education, allowing people to gain the knowledge to feel confident in their personal decisions. This show highlights the unique financial perspectives of its many guests, including economists, attorneys, book authors, business owners, and tax professionals. It is provided for general information purposes only and does not consider your particular investment objectives or financial situation and is not intended as recommendations appropriate for you. Before acting on information on this show, strongly consider seeking advice from your own financial advisor. The opinions expressed on Money Sense do not necessarily reflect the opinions of Ellenbecker Investment Group employees and leaders. Please enjoy today's show.
Are solely those of the host and their guests. They may not reflect those of WISN radio staff or management.
Money Sense is brought to you by Ellenbecker Investment Group, four-time recipient of the Better Business Bureau Torch Award for business ethics and integrity. Ellenbecker Investment Group is the only Wisconsin investment company to receive this prestigious award more than once by providing exceptional planning and extraordinary service each and every day. Go to ellenbecker.com and listen to Money Sense Saturdays at 2 and Sundays at noon.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, children of all ages, welcome to the latest edition of Money Sense. My name is Richard Wolosek, tax advisor for Ellenbecker Investment Group, and today we are hosting a special edition of Tax Talk. The good news is that this will not be the usual year-end spiel about what to track for your tax documents or any year-end planning opportunities. Maybe we'll revisit those next year, but instead, we're going to be focusing on the upcoming election, which is more timely, along with those sunsetting tax laws. So I'm going to start out with the game, and we'll dive in deeper into various topics. But before I begin, I have some housekeeping to attend. Ellenbecker Investment Group is located in Pewaukee, just north of I-94, between Highway 164 and Highway F in Ridgeview Corporate Park, and the village of Whitefish Bay in the Equitable Bank building across from Winkies. We also service clients in Bonita Springs, Florida. Visit ellenbecker.com for more details. So for starters, we're gonna begin with a game. It's a game I called, it's created Who Said It, and this relates to the proposed tax plans by candidates running for president. The rules are simple, you have two answers to choose from. Trump or Harris. For those numbers people, that gives you a 50-50 chance of winning per question. And our listeners can play along as we go through a series of questions in no particular order. So for question number one, the question is, who would increase the deduction for business startup costs to $50,000 instead of $5,000?
Harris.
I'm going to go with Harris as well.
You two are correct.
I want a buzzer. I want a buzzer on this one.
A buzzer? Yeah,
yeah,
we don't
totally
have a buzzer
family
or
feud style.
We can do mic swings if you want to really get the answer first. You can pull it from Ed and then so on and so forth. Speaking of which, I forgot to introduce. I have the entire tax team here with me, right? Sandra's here, Ed is here, and Catherine as well. So the entire team is definitely going to be part of our show today. Now back to question number two here is, who would decrease the corporate income tax rate?
Trump.
Got to be Trump.
It's Trump. Correct. Absolutely. So number three, who would make the expiring individual income cuts permanent?
Trump again.
I think maybe both a little bit to some extent, right? Depending like
bit.
In that middle class arena. I think Harris has a little bit there of extending some of that.
Kind of, sort of.
You'll tell us later.
Right.
Exactly.
We'll get into that a little bit later, but yeah.
This one's an interesting one, too. It's revolving around net investment income tax. So who would increase net investment income tax to 5%?
That's a Harris one.
Yeah, I was going to say that as well.
Mm-hmm. That's interesting. And then the last one that I have pulled up here is, who does not want tip income to be taxed?
Trump. Same Harris as well, yeah.
I thought Trump said that too. Well, he was Social Security, sorry.
No, this was actually a trick question. Both of them are listed as making tip income exempt or not taxable. And I kind of curious how that one's going to play out, but it is a common theme between those two.
Sure.
And also one of those things where you kind of scratch your head saying, well, how's that going to look on the tax return then, or be tracked so we don't have to pay taxes on it? But I could go on with more questions, but I think this is a perfect segue to take a deeper dive into what we know today. Except first, we're going to take a brief break and be back shortly. And welcome back to our regularly scheduled program. I'm Richard, host of today's Money Sense and special election edition of Tax Talk. And we're going to take a closer look at the candidates and their thoughts about what is taxed or how it could change. So I'll start out with the current Biden-Harris administrative policies just for context. It was under the proposed budget for fiscal year 2024 increase in tax rates on corporate, individual, and capital gains income. Tax credits for workers and families would be expanded, and tax bases would be expanded for more types of income. And I don't know about you, but when I sit back and think about what I just heard, it's all very general and very vague. So I dug into this for more specifics, right? So specifically, the corporate tax rate would increase to 26%, and the net investment income tax that we talked about earlier would also include business income. So you could also think of it as another tax on small business profits. Long-term gains tax, that's a headliner as of lately. Long-term gains would be taxed at ordinary income tax rates. However, this is a big however, it's only when your taxable income is in excess of $1 million. So the average taxpayer really doesn't need to be concerned about that headline, because $1 million is a lot of money. You're not average if you have that much, right? Otherwise, there's increases in the child tax credit as well. It kind of ranges between $3,000 and $3,600 depending on the age of the kids and whatnot. But again, it's kind of in that upward trajectory of being more. And it's just a matter of time of when or how that would be put into tax law. So I could go on, but I'm curious, Catherine, what have you found out?
So I kind of broke this out sort of into different topic areas. And I think the first one that most people will be interested in is how does the Trump candidate view the individual income taxes and what would stay the same or change there. So he has said in some of his rallies and his presentations that he would like to retain the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act, make that permanent, which so that would keep things the same. The tax rates did change back in 2018. They've been that way, and they were supposed to sunset in 2025, end of 2025, but he's saying that he would make those tax changes permanent. He has also discussed the idea of replacing personal income taxes with increased tariffs. There has not been any kind of explication on how that would work, but that's one of the things that he suggested. He's also talked about reinstating the unlimited itemized deduction for state and local taxes that are paid. That would change things a little bit on the Schedule A for itemized deductions. Some people might more likely be able to take some itemized deductions versus that large standard deduction. He's discussed potentially exempting Social Security from taxation, also the tip income, as we mentioned before, and also he has mentioned exempting overtime pay from taxes as well. And that is kind of where he stands on the individual income taxes. For business taxes, he's talked about lowering the corporate income tax rate from 21% to 20%. And for companies that produce the products in the U.S., he's talked about lowering that to 15%. He has not made any sort of plan or comment on capital gains or dividend taxes. He has talked about some credits and deductions and exemptions. He says that he would like to, again, the state and local taxes, put that sort of back onto the Schedule A. His running mate has discussed increasing the child tax credit to $5,000. For the estate and wealth taxes, he would like to retain the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act, keep things the same as they are now. Later in the program, Sandra is going to kind of go over that and kind of see where we stand there. He's talked a lot about excise taxes. This is a strange one that I actually wasn't too aware of, and I think there's maybe a lot of people who maybe are not very aware of it, but the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act does tax large private university endowments. It does that now, and they did I think it was about $244 million that they took in. Let's see. In 2022, they took in $244 million in this tax under the TCJA. And he has talked about using this tax to pay for something called an American Academy, which would be some sort of a college or school where people could go for free. So, right. So he's thinking about it's about a 14% levy on the wealthiest private institutions. For payroll taxes, again, he was talking about exempting Social Security benefits from taxation and overtime pay from taxation. And he talked a lot about tariffs and trade and increasing the baseline tariff on all U.S. imports 10 to 20% and to have a 60% tariff on U.S. imports from China. He's mentioned before, again, I said this, he hasn't actually spelled out exactly how this would work, but he is considering replacing personal taxes, income taxes, with increased tariffs.
There's a lot of give and take there, right?
Yes.
Ed, what have you discovered about the policies regarding what Harris is thinking about?
Yeah, so kind of the main takeaways I'm getting from, you know, the Harris administration, if they're elected, kind of looking at middle class tax cuts in the expanding the child tax credits and the earned income credit. You know, kind of looking at with the TCJA, still a little unspecified on her plan, but, you know, kind of based on the Biden administration, kind of looking at no tax increases for anyone making less than $400,000. So, you know, maybe that's an extension of the tax cuts, but just kind of a limitation on that income as well there. You know, obviously some of her tax changes might affect the economy a little bit as far as reducing GDP and employment, but we're kind of looking at her tax plan reducing the deficit by taxing the wealthy. Kind of looking at the business taxes, so we talked about Trump's findings there, or Catherine's findings on Trump there. You know, this is going to be at that 21% rate right now, jumping to 28% under Harris. Kind of moving along to the capital gains dividends tax, increasing that top tax rate, as you Richard mentioned, to 28% for taxable income over $1 million. You know, not going to affect a whole lot of taxpayers that, you know, are clients of, you know, potentially Ellenbecker, but or the just kind of the general population there. But yeah, so that's going to be a little bit of an opportunity maybe to do some tax planning around that. Right now, that top tax rate for capital gains is at 20%. And we could definitely look at, you know, before things go into effect, kind of looking at those that tax rate for some tax planning opportunities for harvesting gains, things like that. So other things we did talk about in the icebreaker, you know, the net investment income tax to 5% on income above $400,000. So that's a bit of a change there. And then that obviously on the headlines, the taxing the unrealized appreciation, capital gains becoming, you know, something that she's willing to, you know, push for her if she's elected. Kind of moving along to those credits, deductions, exemptions. We talked about the exemption for tip income, similar to Trump. Expanding that child tax credit. She's looking at a $6,000 child tax credit for newborns, kids under age one, and then $3,600 for children 2 to 5, and then $3,000 for older children. Right now, we just have the $2,000 tax credit for, you know, anyone under age 17, $500 on anybody over that. But yeah, that's definitely a big change, and it's going to affect, you know, how poverty is looked at, some changes there, and kind of similar to some of the changes we saw during the pandemic with the ARPA Act. Moving along to that earned income credit, you know, obviously this is going to be an expansion of that ARPA, kind of looking at taxpayers that do not claim a child. Expanding on the premium tax credits for ACA and marketplace insurance. It's going to reduce healthcare costs as they've done under the Biden administration as well. Expanding house tax credits. There were talks of a new home buyer credit, $25,000 over 4 years. So that's just really going to be able to, you know, make that home ownership more of an opportunity after, if that does happen. Also, kind of some low-income housing credits available as well. A couple other things, clawing back depreciation and interest deductions for certain rental construction investment. Increasing that $5,000 deduction for startup costs, kind of helping out some of those newer businesses as another one of those icebreaker questions that we mentioned earlier. And just a couple other things. We have the increase to Medicare tax potentially at on income over $400,000. Right now that rate's 2.9% between employee and employer, so 5%. It's quite the jump there, but obviously, you know, taxing those higher income earners. And then there's the billionaire minimum tax for high net worth taxpayers as well, taxing those unrealized capital gains. And one other thing I did note when researching was just that limitation on retirement account contributions for those high income taxpayers with the large IRA balances. So kind of have to see what that looks like. So those are the findings.
That's going to make tax planning that much harder with all these moving pieces here. Sandra, have you come across any similarities between the two candidates?
Well, I heard a lot more differences than I heard similarities. I'm
right.
Sure our listeners felt the same way. I think one thing that they've been consistent on that both Ed and Catherine mentioned was definitely looking at that tip income and potentially not taxing that going forward. I also think increasing that child tax credit, that's something that they're both talking about, although they have different levels and maybe potentially changing the income limitations. It looks like both of the candidates are favoring an increase to that child tax credit.
Do you think that's going to spawn larger families going forward? Because my mother comes from a very large family, many brothers and siblings, and nowadays it seems like a lot of families have one or two children at that rate. But if you had a tax benefit, if you will, would that help to increase family sizes, do you think?
I often have clients ask me if they should have another child so that they can get the child tax
okay.
credit.
All right.
Having three children of my own, it does not even begin to compensate you for the cost of those children. So I'm hoping that nobody's making a decision to have children based on the financial benefit of the child tax credit. But you never know, right? I do think that there was a lot of studies when we had the increased child tax credit during the pandemic, that really showed that there was a real decrease in child poverty levels. And I think those have been something that we're, you know, people are really looking at and seeing that there was really a benefit to those children. And so I think they're both talking about increasing that going forward. So that would not surprise me.
Got it.
It looks like they both want to make some adjustments to the corporate tax rate.
Yeah.
Although I wouldn't say there's similarities because one wants to increase it considerably and one wants to make a slight decrease.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that will be really interesting. And obviously that's going to have an impact on the market. And, you know, we'll see how that looks down the road.
Mm-hmm.
I know in the next segment we're going to talk a little bit about the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act. That's the legislation that we had implemented in 2018 that really has brought us all of the existing tax rules that we have in place right now. Interestingly enough, the corporate tax rate does not expire with the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act provisions that are due to sunset at the end of 2025. So legislatively, I do think they're going to have some congressional action to make a change to the corporate tax rate. So I think it's going to be very interesting as we move forward to look at how they're going to pay for some of the adjustments, you know, especially mm-hmm. I think on the Harris ticket.
Right.
But it does sound like they have some things in place that Ed mentioned and talking or in paying for some of those things. So we'll be all surprised at election time to see who actually gets elected and what of these provisions moves forward.
Exactly. So I don't know about you, but that was a lot to take in. And I'm sure many of the things that we just talked about may change between now and when that final tax bill is passed and signed into tax law. So with that, we're going to take a break and then shift gears when we come back. Hello, and welcome back. I'm Richard, host of today's Money Sense and special edition of Tax Election Talk. For this section, I have resident expert Sandra next to me, and we're going to be talking about sunsets. Typically, for me, sunsets evoke positivity and good feelings. And I don't know about you, but for some reason, I picture a beach. And on that beach is a coconut tree. And the sun is setting down. The sky is kind of pinkish or orangish. And everything is relaxing until Uncle Sam shows up. So with that, Sandra, what's on the horizon?
Pina colada is in my horizon right. After that setup. So, well, let's talk about that a little bit. I know I teed that up a little bit in the next segment, but we are talking with it a lot with our clients and trying to do some really, aggressive tax planning as we look to the sunset. So as we mentioned, it was the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act of 2017 that led to a lot of the provisions that we have been enjoying for the last, 7 years or so.
And I
remember when those provisions came into effect. In fact, it was the first year that Ellen Becker Investment Group had a tax team. And so we were really excited about the opportunity to do some planning and to educate our clients about all of the things that were changing. In order to get that passed through the Congress, though, they had to put a sunset clause on it for budget purposes. Mm-hmm. And that sunset is at the end of 2025. And I remember thinking back in 2018, oh my gosh, that's so far away. It's, forever. And here we are, fast time passes. So I thought it would be nice today, as Richard mentioned, to kind of walk through some of the things that are going to change if nothing passes through the Congress.
What you're saying, if nobody can agree?
If nobody can agree, which...
what are the chances of that?
We know over the last few years that getting Washington to agree is getting more and more difficult. And so anything can happen. The election, as we've talked about, is going to have consequences. But also, we have to have the Congress in place to support the initiatives that the presidential candidates are discussing. And so it's going to be probably a hybrid of all the things that Ed and Catherine talked about today, as well as incorporating some of the tax laws that we have in place right now. But I wanted to walk through for sure exactly what is due to sunset. As you mentioned, sort of the path of least resistance here. So without any legislative action at all, these are the things that we are going to see different in 2026 compared to what we have right now. Maybe the most important thing on the individual level is really the reduction or the increase, I guess you would say, to the tax rates. So right now we are enjoying tax rates 10%, 12%, 22%, all the way up to 37%. That TOPS tax rate would increase to 39.6%. Our 12% bracket becomes 15, 25, or 22 becomes 25, and so on. So there's about a reduction of 2 to 3 points with the current tax rates that we have. And so that would definitely impact almost all individual and joint filers in 2026.
Especially those brackets get squeezed a little bit.
There's definitely a change in the bracket space in mm-hmm. addition to the rates. They will be adjusted for inflation. So as we know from 2018 to now, we did have a period of pretty significant inflation due to the pandemic mm-hmm. And various other reasons, of course. And so we will definitely have a change in terms of what that bracket space looks like.
For comparison purposes of inflation, is that correlated to like the Social Security benefits?
Exactly.
Having those such large increases that have been kind of tapering?
Yeah, exactly. Okay. Yep. That's how they'll calculate that. The other thing that was pretty significant was the change to the standard deduction. So in 2018, the standard deduction nearly doubled for all filing statuses. For example, if you were a single person, you had a standard deduction prior to the change of about $6,000. It went up to $12,000.
Right.
Part of that was, you may recall, not only did we have the impetus to reduce the overall tax liability for tax filers, but we also were talking a lot about simplifying the tax code. And so one of those simplifications was to eliminate the personal exemptions. So mm-hmm. back in the day, we used to get a $2,000 exemption for each of the taxpayers and all of our dependents. They sort of did away with those exemptions and combined it into a much larger standard deduction. So those personal exemptions would come back, and we would go back to an inflation-adjusted standard deduction in 2026 if we're allowed to sunset. So on the itemized deduction side, that was a big change for a lot of taxpayers. We did probably, I would say, 60 to 70% of the tax returns that we did internally are taxpayers' itemized deductions. Right now, overall, roughly about 5% of the population itemizes deductions. Again, that was the impetus to that was simplifying the tax code. Mm-hmm. So let's not make people have to go through all the work of doing adding up all those itemized deductions. Let's just give them a really high base default amount in that standard deduction. But if the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act sunsets, then I would expect that more and more people will go back to itemizing deductions because of that lower standard deduction. One of the tax aspects that many people will be happy about if it sunsets is the SALT deduction. So SALT, you'll recall, stands for the state and local tax deduction. It was capped at $10,000 in 2018. That had a significant impact on taxpayers in higher tax states. So $10,000 is the cap that we're allowed to deduct for a combination of real estate taxes and the state income tax that's paid, really resulting in not itemizing deductions for many taxpayers. We would be allowing a greater benefit from deducting these taxes in 2025, in 2026, if the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act does sunset. There was also a little bit of a reduction in the mortgage interest deduction. For those of you with high mortgage debt, we were limited to $750,000 of debt in terms of what we're able to deduct. That would go back up to $1 million of debt. And we also had a change to the home equity debt. What changed in 2018 was we are only allowed to deduct the mortgage interest on home equity debt if it was used to substantially improve your primary residence. So that would go back to whatever you put on your home equity line would be deductible again. So that might be a benefit to some taxpayers. Mm-hmm. So we'll have to wait and see. The other thing on the deduction side was itemized deductions, the miscellaneous itemized deductions. So the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act eliminated most miscellaneous itemized deductions. That's going to be primarily your investment and advisory fees, legal fees, and unreimbursed employee expenses. So we would go back to, again, allowing those to the extent that they exceed 2% of adjusted gross income. If the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act does, in fact, sunset.
It's a lot to keep track of now.
It is a lot to keep track of.
We're going to have to become better bookkeepers to keep track of everything that we can deduct if that happens, right?
Absolutely. Right. We'll go back to paying more attention to all of those itemized deductions. Mm-hmm. Charitable deductions is something that we've paid a lot of attention to over the last few years, helping clients to effectively get some tax benefit for their charitable giving. Those taxpayers that are no longer itemizing deductions, if they're over 70 and a half, they have an opportunity to take money out of their IRAs, get a tax benefit for their charitable giving. We've also seen certainly an increase in donor advised funds and the funding of those over the last few years, trying to get over that standard deduction hump with our more charitable taxpayers. Mm-hmm. What else do you want to talk about? You want to talk about some of the business tax provisions?
QBID, right? Qualified business income deduction. Right. That will be a no-go going forward, correct?
Yeah, that's a really big one. I think owners of pass-through businesses, so partnerships, S-corps, as well as sole proprietors, those people who are just filing a Schedule C, mm-hmm. Many of them are able to claim a deduction up to 20% of their net profit, also known as the qualified business income deduction or Section 199A, beginning in 2026. that deduction no longer will be available. So might be a time to start to look at potentially moving into more of a C status. We'll have to wait and see. Again,
that one's going to be felt though. That's 20% off the top end. There.
That's a big one for our business owners.
Totally.
Yeah, I think that's something that we're going to be. I would imagine that that's something that is going to be looked at pretty carefully,
yep.
And we may get some kind of a hybrid. Again, if we can get everybody to agree,
mm-hmm.
That might be something that gets extended or maybe expanded, but certainly some kind of a hybrid with regard to that pass-through income.
Mm-hmm.
I think the estate tax is something else we want to talk about, you know, quickly. One of the things that changed with the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act was a significant increase in the estate tax exemption amount. It was roughly about $5 million in 2017 and bounced up to about $11 million. And just as a reminder, what that means is that if you pass away and your total estate is worth X number of dollars, if it's over $5 million, you would pay an estate tax on the amount above that should these tax laws sunset.
Mm-hmm.
Right now, we're at somewhere around $13 million with the cost of living adjustments that we've had over the last 7 or 8 years. So again, that means as an individual person, you would not pay an estate tax over an estate with a value of about $13 million, and that doubles for a married couple. So it's a pretty sizable amount. We're expecting that that would sunset as well, back down to that $5 million mark with cost of living adjustments. So for those people with very high estates, I think it's something that we need to really be looking at from a planning perspective over the next 18 months or so.
Exactly. We'll have to keep a prize of the headlines coming down to figure out which way things are kind of leaning towards or which way the wind is blowing to better forecast the future and figure out what's the optimal approach. But I do dread the word retroactive, as it really makes tax planning very challenging because it takes time to get things built into tax law. It takes time to get it pushed through and signed off. And then they add the word retroactive and you go, well, shoot, if I had more time, I could have maneuvered or moved things from the left pocket to the right pocket had I known. So, however, I think at that rate here, we're kind of at a fork in our conversation. So stay tuned and we'll be right back. And we're back on the air to discuss all things great as it relates to taxes. I'm Richard Wolosek, tax advisor, and I'm going to loft up a question up for grabs to the team to ponder. And the question goes like this. What are your thoughts about where things are headed? And I'll start out with the idea that change is constant and we're all very adaptive here at EIG. I look forward to seizing the opportunity and smoothing out taxes for the long run. In the short term, personally, I do enjoy the standard deduction being so high, as Sandra previously mentioned, and that's purely from a compliance and volume perspective when I think about taxes in the month of March, March being the busiest month of the year for tax preparation. In the long term, I'm thinking it's a full-time job here to anticipate change and to keep up with it, and then personally, it's trying to engineer an outcome that's based on all the parameters as we manage and build tax plans. So it's really taking out all the information that we have and all the information that we know to figure out who is my client and where are they today within those tax brackets, and then trying to fill up those brackets knowing that if we do something in a few years, it may cost more in dollars to access those same retirement dollars just because those tax rates rise. So trying to seize the moment, seize the opportunity, and maximize as much as we can tolerate taxes in a year is definitely the short-term approach. But I think 2025 is going to be a big year for tax planning as we try to work our best with what we know. What are your thoughts?
Well, I think I would agree with what you said there, Richard. So for 2024 and 2025, we're definitely looking at for our clients opportunities to either distribute with a Roth conversion or distribute to maybe a trust or a brokerage account. income from these tax-deferred accounts at these lower tax rates that we have right now. So in 2024 and 2025, it's not for everyone. It really depends on what your bracket is and kind of where you stand, whether or not it would be a good opportunity to do a Roth conversion or distribute some funds from a tax-deferred account and put those in another type of account or spend down and use those assets, whatever works for you at the time.
Ed or Sandra, either of you have other ideas here?
Yeah, I think, you know, obviously just trying to maximize for 2024 here. We have some time towards the end of the year here, and then 2025. Before we, you know, obviously don't know what's going to happen with the election, but, you know, if we are getting those tax cuts extended through, you know, Trump's administration, then, you know, obviously we'll continue to do what we're doing and maximize the lower rates. But, you know, if Harris is, you know, elected, maybe we're kind of, you know, getting an extension of a year or two, but obviously affecting those higher income earners. So just gives us maybe a little bit more room, similar to the Trump situation as far as trying to maximize, because we know that tax rates are going to increase in the future. Other considerations right now are, you know, maybe holding off on that charitable contributions, donor advised fund contributions until, you know, 2026 when we have the higher rate, you know, if Harris is selected, maybe it's 2027, but, you know, kind of getting a little bit more aggressive with some of those things might be a good opportunity.
Yeah, I was thinking about that too. That's the exact same idea that I had, was if you are charitably inclined, you save less in tax if you pay a lower tax rate. So if you wait a year or a few months until the next calendar year when tax rates rise, then those same dollars save more in tax.
Absolutely.
So that's going to potentially hurt nonprofits in the 2025 year as people are trying to wager, well, if I take a tax stance on this, I'd rather save more than pay less in tax or vice versa.
That's a good point too.
So
yeah.
It's definitely one of those things that I was thinking here. But I don't know, best case, worst case scenario is that tax laws get extended. Is that what we're leaning towards, or is it a matter of we'll wait and see what happens and then we plan with what we know, right?
Yeah, definitely some variances between the parties. So yeah, I guess kinda wait and see, but we take advantage of what we know right now. So mm-hmm.
All right. Well, Sandra, we'll save the best for last here. Do you have any words of wisdom?
I wish I had a crystal ball so that I knew exactly what was going to happen. But I know we're getting close to the election. We're all going to be really happy not to have to see the commercials and get all the mail pieces.
I've been getting a lot of mail lately, and they're all different pieces.
But more importantly, I think that's really going to give us a better clue as to where we're going with some of the things that we talked about today.
Totally.
Not only, obviously, will we have the results of the presidential election, but we'll also have a better sense of the makeup of the Congress. And obviously, that's where everything starts. For now, I think from a planning perspective, I think we are planning for the sunset, because mm-hmm. That seems to me to be sort of worst case scenario, at least at the individual level.
Right.
And so, as you know, Catherine and Ed mentioned, I think it really makes sense probably at this point to accelerate income into 2024 and 2025, whether that's, you know, through good business planning, through Roth conversions, through additional IRA distributions, however that looks. And then certainly deferring some of those deductions. So I know we talked a little bit about the charitable giving and potentially looking to defer some of that giving into 2026 when we expect those tax rates to be a little bit higher. But also, as we talked about, it's not just those charitable gifts, but also, you know, the timing of paying your real estate tax could potentially come into play again.
I haven't had to think about that for a number of years.
Right?
Do you do it in December or do you wait until January?
Exactly. Yeah, that's always a thing here in Wisconsin, right?
Exactly.
Business deductions, even maybe some of those miscellaneous deductions from a employee
the unreimbursed, you know,
the unreimbursed employee expenses. So there's a lot of things that we could do to potentially defer some of those deductions into 2026 and accelerate income into these next few years. So I think I'm looking forward mostly to finding out, you know, what direction we're going to go. And as Richard, as you said, you know, we're really adaptable to change. We're paying a lot of attention to what's going on politically in the market. All of those things really are going to have an impact on how we advise our clients and what is the maximum benefit that we can get from planning now and short-term and long-term.
Yeah, I picked up on the word uncertainty. It's hard to make a plan when you're uncertain which way things are going to go, right? So, yeah, as previously mentioned, we just work with what we know and what we think is going to happen to maximize the opportunity, and that's our plan. And then we adapt and change as more information comes out and as we can fine-tune and say, well, oh, here's the framework of what we built, and then let's just make a tweak or adjustment to get it in the direction that we want to go. So I think everything was great today. I think we had a really great conversation, so I'd like to thank Sandra and Catherine and Ed for their insight today. And with that, I'd like to wrap up the episode with one final question to chew on as you enjoy your day. And I wanted to ask if you, the listener here, if you're still using a tax preparer or a tax planner, because we do both here at EIG, and dare I say, make it fun. And even if paying taxes isn't fun, we'll put you back in control. Money Sense airs on Saturdays from 2 to 3 p.m. and on Sundays from 12 to 1 p.m. If you enjoyed today's show and want to learn more about EIG and our upcoming events, please visit ellenbecker.com or call us at 262-691-3200. As always, I hope that I made a difference in your personal and financial well-being. Remember, before we plan, before we advise, before we invest, we always listen.